And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show. In studio today, it's Mikey, and JJ is with us on a Thursday. You're like a fish out of water here.
I don't know what I'm doing.
These preview. What's a preview show, yeah. Says you.
Just, it's easier analysis after the game, though, rather than preview in front and before.
Well, it is. It is in general. Yeah, I think we all agree on that. Damien's on the line. Damien, how are you?
Hi, lads.
All good. Come here. I was outside there, just left the football show. Stevie McDonald was on it, and himself and JJ were out bragging about the year they got football and hurler of the year in the same year. 2003, was it?
2003, yeah.
20
yeah.
grand car you both cashed in. You took the money, the two of you.
Well, I couldn't drive the car at the time, so it was no good to me now for a while, so I actually cashed it in and got a car and got insurance and everything for it, so it was a good old start. I was actually down in college, down in WIT at the time, and when everyone heard that, and after getting the 20 grand cash, so I made a lot of friends overnight. Now everyone's always my round in the door. Inside in WIT as well, but no, yeah, it's great to see Stevie. All right, yeah,
it's like winning streak.
Good memories.
Winning streak. Will you take the car or take the money?
The money every day of the week, especially when you're a college student as well.
Oh yeah, ching. You're a college student. 20 grand. That's fairy tale
stuff.
A
long way.
It's a lot of Buckfast.
That would get you through the whole 4 years, nearly. Really.
There's no Buckfast. It's just mid-extend, so you could afford a decent pint. Then
actually go to a pub.
You could actually go to a pub. But then you have to bring two or three lads with you as well, because you couldn't be in the pub on your own. So you'd have to pay for a couple of rounds for the boys as well to get them in.
Yeah, for real fancy posh student you were for a little while.
For a month. Till the money was took off me.
Come here, Brian Cody got wind of this. Yeah. Come here, we haven't talked because there's been no hurling show since the All-Ireland Club Championship last Friday on St. Patrick's Day. Damien, you tipped Coola, or you tipped Ballyea, not going to rub your nose in it, but one of the most surprising things of it was how well Tony Kelly was marked. Is this as Coola found a secret, or was it just an off day from Tony?
Well, Colin, it wasn't a great game of hurling. I think Ballyea never got going, to be very fair to him. You know, they played very poor. Tony, by his own standards, you know, his own fierce high standards, I suppose he had a quietish game. You know, I do wonder, he took two shots early on in the game, and one hit the post and one just went marginally wide. And I often wonder, if they went over, would we have seen a different Tony, you know, where his confidence maybe dropped a little bit. But what happened was, Coola played a man marking system, so they did, and I'm sorry now, but I don't know the names, but number 7 for Coola picked up Tony at the very start of the match. And I suppose I have a particular huge interest in Tony, as he's our ambassador, so I keep a huge eye on him, right? But what happened, Colin, was number 7 picked him up, and after 20 minutes he sent a signal to the Coola management to say that he was getting tired. He was doing a complete man-marking role. Wherever Tony went, he followed him. So Tony went to the left and the ball broke to the right. He still continued to the left marking Tony. And after 20 minutes, when he got tired and let the management know, the number 8 picked up Tony. And number 8 then followed on in the job that number 7 was doing for the game. And I suppose it worked a treat. It was a man-marking job. Cooler management had their job done. The Galway management of Matt Keeney and Craig Kindy, and it was a great achievement by Coola, you know, brilliant achievement, brilliant by a Dublin team winning their first All-Ireland hurling. But that's exactly what happened, Colin. They did a man-marking job and them two players picked them up at different stages, and Tony, by his own standards, had a quiet game, and I was disappointed for Ballyea. It was a very poor game, extremely poor game.
Yeah, that's interesting there, and that's something I always had in my head. Tony Kelly is such an athlete that maybe he runs his marker, he just wears him down, mm-hmm. and then just destroys him in the last 20 minutes. Yeah. You often see him get scores in the second half, whereas like put someone on him in the first half, then put somebody fresher on him in the second half, and that kind of makes sense, especially with Tony Kelly, who can cover so much ground on the field, especially when he's midfield.
He's Tony Kelly for Clare and Tony Kelly for Ballyea are different animals as well, because for Clare there's a few people who need to be watched. You can't probably be quite that focused on Tony Kelly, but with Tony Kelly for Ballyea, you know, if you stop Tony Kelly, you've gone a long way to stopping Ballyea. So that was probably why Coola could make that decision. And it was Malone who went on, and Malone scored the goal for Coola, and then he was the guy
he got man of the match, didn't he?
He was the midfielder who came on to him then, so when he can when you're Coola and you have that many attacking threats, you can take a goal scoring midfielder out of the game to pretty much take Tony Kelly out of the game. So there was, you know, it's just having the resources, isn't it?
Yeah, is this the future for Tony Kelly? Two markers, not at the same time, alternating.
Yeah, you hope it won't be, but I suppose going into the game, there's no secret to stop Tony Kelly. You have a fair chance, and probably that's the big difference between club hurling and intercounty hurling is that Tony Kelly was getting space up to this. Even in the Munster Championship, he was getting a lot of space and scoring 5 or 6 points, and he was running the show because there was no big Shamazes in the middle of the field. That half forwards were staying half forward in club hurling. They don't go in midfield and bottle up the whole thing as they do in intercounty hurling now at the moment. So Tony had that space, but obviously Coola had a look at it and see, right, how are we going to stop it? And it was actually brilliant bit of tactics. Now you'd have to take her hat off to Matty Kenny as well, and he knew exactly what he's doing. And after 20 minutes and a lad's coming on with fresh legs on top of you, and especially if Tony got a couple of points in the first 10-15 minutes, maybe he wouldn't mind who was marking him. But again, getting on the ball, getting confidence, getting scoring, especially in Croke Park, and other lads would look at him. And if he wasn't doing the business, it was probably up to someone else to stand up to the mark. But unfortunately, it never happened, you know.
Yeah, and they're going to obviously give a huge boost back to Dublin now that they're all back and they've got that confidence and they're all Ireland champions. Are we going to see many of those cooler fellas involved? You know, we know David Tracy and Mark Shute are already there. Like, I mean, the midfielder, like, what did you say his name was that scored the goal?
Malone,
he looks like a really good player, and like, the you know, it's a pity Conor Callaghan obviously can't.
That's the biggest drawback. Best club forward since he came out into the interprovincial championship is Conor Callaghan, and he destroyed every team he came across. And if you had a guy like that in full forward line, you could actually focus your whole game plan around it, especially with Mark Shute beside him. The two of them know each other very well. It would have been absolutely seamless now to put them in, but unfortunately, I think he went away and scored 2-5, did he, for number 20 wise last night. And
we were talking about it there earlier on the football show.
The Dublin manager would be hoping now he would have held scorers last night, and they would have turned, he said, go back to the hurling. But unfortunately now, he's going to be with the football for the year, and that's the way it's, but it's a huge, huge loss to Dublin.
Yeah, I was saying it on the football show. He drop kicked one of his goals and he rounded the goalkeeper and tapped it into an empty net for his other one. Conor Callaghan appreciation show we're going to come towards doing, because, like, I mean, he's just brilliant. And it's a pity, look, it's a huge pity for hurling. We're on the hurling podcast, it's a massive pity, but I can't wait to see him in the football jersey as well. We maybe want two Conor Callaghans or else bring back the dual player. But that's cool, a really interesting team, and I'll tell you why I find them interesting is that the idea out there, and we had Sports Show Live last night, we had the Coola Ultras on the show as fans, and they were a great crack, and I love the Coola Ultras. But the idea and the joke last night was they're from Dalkey and they're posh. Like, I mean, their base is in Dalkey, they've one pitch in Dalkey, but, like, I mean, you should see the catchment area they have. Their catchment area runs from Blackrock through Dean's Grange, Monkstown and Dunleary and out to Killiney before reaching out to Ballybrack and Shankill. So it's a massive, massive catchment area. There are very few players from Dalkey because Dalkey's such an expensive place to live. So they were saying that. So what they have to do is they use 5 different public pitches. They rent them off the Dunleary County Council, and they rent the ground from Bray Emmett's. So they do an awful lot of their training in the build up to the game out in Bray Emmett's. So they actually have no home. It's a mad story. Like, I mean, they've no base. So, like, I mean, the idea that they're community based and stuff like that, they're actually not. They're actually the opposite of community based, because they're like nomads. They're all over the place, you know, and I think that makes their achievement even more impressive.
Yeah, my in-laws are from Killiney, so just south of Dalkey, and supposedly Dalkey was, as you said, there's only the one pitch there and they don't use it for a lot. I think it's used mainly for underage, but she said the village of Dalkey was just a wash of red and white, my mother-in-law was saying. So she's saying it was like, she's from Leash herself, she said it was like a rural village before a county final or something. So they really bought into it,
right?
And it was really, now it is in a stockbroker belt, you know, Dalkey's called all sorts, there's all sorts of jokes going around after they won it, but it seemed like people really did buy into it. But then, as you're saying, Bray is a long way from Dalkey, and I'm playing a football challenge match down in Bray Emmett's against Coola next Tuesday night. So they don't, I've played them in Shankill as well. They have a lot of very good young fast footballers, but no pitches to play on. It's mad.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, Damien. I mean, coming from a club like Portumna, who would have that great community spirit, for them to be, and look, they actually estimated the cost of running the team to the All-Ireland Club Final is 100,000, and the rent alone is 30,000 for rent, like renting pitches. Like, this is a tough gig they have.
Oh, well, what they achieved is phenomenal, as I said earlier on, Colin. And, like, I think they're the first team ever to win a Club All-Ireland in Dublin which is just phenomenal as well. But like, it's just a different world up there, Colm, as you well know. Jeez, like, I went up for your show the night before the Club All Ireland, and like, it's just Dublin City, you're stuck in traffic compared to where myself and JJ are. For like, the only time you'd be stuck in traffic if there's cattle or sheep on the road, you know. So like, it's just a different world. And just to tell you that story, like, I wouldn't have known that story, what you're just after saying there, Colm, about renting pitches and having four or five different pitches and what it cost them to win an All-Ireland. Like, that's just crazy stuff. And as you said, it just adds to their achievements, and to say all the youth and talent. But you know, sport up in Dublin, you know, it's a completely different world. And like, even to see what the Dublin footballers are doing there at the moment, it's just absolutely crazy. And I don't think Dublin are going to be too bad this year in the All-Ireland Championship. I think them players and Cooler are going to really add to Joe Cunningham's troops. And I'd tell you one thing, just as a Galway man, it's a very dangerous game, Galway playing Dublin in the Leinster Championship. It's going to be a very dangerous game, and I think them boys are going to add to the whole Dublin setup. But yeah, a phenomenal achievement, Colm, as you just said. It adds to the whole story.
Yeah, and it actually needs to be said as well that they would like to buy land in Dalkey and extend that base there, but like, it's impossible because the price of land in Dalkey. So they're actually in a catch 22, as in maybe they just need to relocate and say they're not from Dalkey, just find themselves a home and be able to buy it, because 30 grand a year on rent alone, like, that's not sustainable.
Serious money. I'd hate to see the membership for the club now if you're putting 30 grand in the field. But the thing about it is, like, it probably works to their advantage for the panel themselves, because there probably would have been four or five guys travelling to training to Bray together, and they kind of, they had a camaraderie there as well. And then they're organising lists, they're all kind of went as a collective thing. And look, we're going out training for 20 minutes, we can't, our local club, it's very hard to get the closest that to the field, which is only 3 or 4 minutes away. It's very hard to get him down to the field, let alone organised to be there 20 minutes before, and then you're travelling for 20 minutes, then 20 minutes back, your whole evening would be gone compared to just walking down to your local field there as well, like, you know. So it's a achievement that has to be admired as well. Now, to be fair, now, again, I didn't realise it until he said it too, and hats off to the guys now for the commitment they're putting in. And look, it's very, very good that they got the reward out of it too.
They're in rugby country too, you know, I mean, they've got big schools rugby teams out there and a big rugby culture out there, so they're fighting against that. So there's all these obstacles.
And Kilmacud next door as well.
Kilmacud next door. But then you look at the catchment area and you go, like, you know, you've got phenomenal. A lot of players to choose from, but because there's so much hassle around different pitches, is it as easy to sell that to these fellas when they might have a rugby pitch close by to them? So there's two ways of looking at it. I think most neutrals will have said congratulations to Cooley, it's great to see a Dublin team winning it, and they are a very impressive team. Lad, Shane Dooley's coming up on the show later on, well, very soon actually, and I was just looking at his stats there. He scored 10 points against Wexford, he scored 2-11 against Limerick, he scored 10 against Laois, and he scored 8 against Galway. He's 2-39 in the league so far, like, in 4 games. Like, it's sensational. He's Offaly's all-time leading hurling scorer. He's never played in a Leinster final. You know, isn't that sad for Shane Dooley, coming from, like, I mean, he would have obviously been 12 in 98 when they won the All-Ireland. His father's on the team. Like, this fella obviously would have thought, this is my life going to happen now, you know. And he has the ability to maybe make that Offaly team if it was a different era, and he's gone around with absolutely nothing to his name.
Yeah, so look, he grew up with access in his family as well. His father and his uncles were involved in the whole thing, and they were probably the best Offaly team that was ever out there as well, like, you know. And then for him, you're probably looking at the last 5 or 6 years, even in Championship, he'd probably been in the top 5 all-time scorers. And as what Jeff was saying, he never even hurled a Leinster final before. Like, you know, he's just desperate to win something with Offaly. Even seeing him going back there, was last year or the year before, he went back playing with the footballers as well, just to succeed with Offaly. And for fairness, you have to tip your hat to him. Like, an unbelievable commitment that he's after putting in. Very easy to just pack it in and say, look, I ain't doing my bit, none of the rest of you are doing it. But he comes back year after year, knowing, probably in his heart of hearts now, if he gets to Leinster final, he'd be absolutely delighted with the year, like, you know. And absolutely an incredible performance and consistency as well. And you'll have to think of the supply of ball he's getting in as well. It's not every 2 seconds the ball's coming in, so he's very economical with the ball he comes in with as well, like, you know.
Yeah,
so
there's two ways of looking at that. I always think about this when you see a brilliant player on a poor team. We'll talk about examples of this. number one way of looking at it is they're going in very limited supply of ball because they're not as good. But number two, he's so much better than all the other forwards. He's been looked for all the time. You know what I mean? Because you're always wondering, how are these lads getting so many scores? It's because when they make a break, 9 times out of 10 they're being picked out, you know. But it is funny, like, I mean, you see there's plenty of examples in football. The most famous one's Declan Brown struggling away with Tipperary, like all-star class team. Kevin O'Brien from Wicklow for years, you know. You could throw out loads more examples in football. Our own Willie Hyland in hurling and Leash, like, I mean, he was a top class player, would have made any team. Just wondering, is there more struggling forwards with really poor teams in hurling that are on the same kind of lines as Shane Dooley?
He's not an out and out forward, but Neil McManus up in Antrim, kind of. Well, he started out on a middle of the road hurling team, and he's going to finish his career with a Division 2A team, and he's so much better than Division 2A. You know, it's a shame that you don't get to see more Neil McManus because he really is phenomenal hurler. He's going to be one current example.
The Bricks in Kerry, I often used to hear about.
Shane Brick there from Kerry as well. He represented, he was on the Railway Cup teams, and Stephen Clinch there from Meath as well, when I was on the panel there for a few years. And he was a phenomenal hurler as well. Just again, had all the ability, had everything that everyone else had. Just unfortunately, he's just born in the wrong county.
Is there a lad from Westmeath, a corner forward from Westmeath, that's really good? Is he a Shaw maybe? No, or I can't think off the top of my head. Damien, can you think of any stalwart Matty Ford type players? Now, Matty Ford actually.
There used to be Keith Higgins as well from Mayo.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal hurler.
Is he phenomenal,
you know,
Damien?
Players used to hurl with.
Oh, yeah, I've seen him. He's unbelievable.
He is. Yeah, the lads will tell you that. I always remember Gerard Lucknan was over his 1 year for Railway Cup, and we played Munster up in Crow Park under lights. And I was corner forward the same day myself, and Keith Higgins definitely scored a goal without question. Scored a goal on the Limerick keeper, was in the I can't think of his name, left hand on top, and the ball went behind the line and he flicked the ball away the goalkeeper, and basically we lost the game by 2 points. And the goal, it was definitely a goal, and Keith Higgins scored a goal that was never given, and like, it would have been such an unbelievable story for him and for Mayo hurling, you know, to win a Railway Cup medal up in Crow Park. But that's just, you know, he was able to hurl, a right good hurler, and his club back home in Mayo is predominantly a football club driven crazy by his father, who's a mad hurling man. And like, I often spoke to Keith Higgins, and he used to come up to Galway to Athenry to play, to watch county semi-finals in Galway. So like, he loves hurling, simple as that. But yeah, he's like, that's just an example. But just going back on Shane Dooley, I see what you're saying about Shane Dooley. I feel sorry for him, but I think Shane is realistic enough. If they had a good championship in the round robin, that's as far as off you go, you know. And
yeah, no, they play the winners of the round robin, and then they play Dublin or Galway, I'm pretty sure, if they're to win that.
Yeah.
Can I just pull you up on that Matty Ford comment?
And another thing, Colin, you just mentioned.
Go on, Damien.
You just mentioned another thing there, Colin. You mentioned another player there, Willie Hyland, right? Okay, we know Willie very well through Netwatch. He's very high up there with Netwatch for the security, okay? And Willie told me one day that he'd never played in Crow Park.
Ah, that's terrible. What do you not have?
Yeah, now double check that. Yeah, and I'm nearly certain he told me that one day, and I think that's very sad. If that's, you know, because as you said, a man has given so many years of dedication. So maybe if you can do a bit of research, you know, like Willie Hyland, a great man to field the ball, a target man, strong left hand on top, a phenomenal scorer, all that. But I'm nearly certain he told me one day that he never played in Crow Park, which I think is very. Very, very sad for such a legend in Leash hurling circles.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that.
So that's something you can check up, Colin.
No, I will check it up, yeah. Don't worry about that. I don't really like this old research lark, but I will. I'll have a look at that. Before Mikey lynches me, he's staring at me here. I said Matty Ford kind of at the start of his career. He did get All-Ireland semi-finals, and he got played Leinster finals as well. Yeah. That was towards the end. It looked for a while like he was a Declan Brown, you know, until Jason Ryan took over, and Wexford obviously got pretty good in that stage.
That's okay, we're friends again now.
Okay, Grant, you can stop staring. staring at me now. Lads, Derek McGrath is extending his parental leave until September. Wait and hear this. I don't think I love any manager in Gaelic football or hurling as much as I love Derek McGrath. He was on the show 2 weeks ago. Incredibly honest. A brilliant, brilliant manager. And what he's doing here with the parental leave is it's so honest. And Derek McGrath is honest, like, to a fault with managers. And I'd love saying this, as in Waterford are at the top table. They're able to, you know, draw with Kilkenny. They're on the cusp. They're winning under 21s. Derek McGrath is open with the media. He talks to the media. It doesn't seem to do Waterford any harm whatsoever. He doesn't shield his players from the media like some other counties. And I'd love Waterford to win in All-Ireland just to banish that nonsense notion that an interview in March is going to affect your preparation. But anyways, because I talk about that enough, he's given up teaching. And the reason he's given up teaching, he says, a lot of the lads will be looking for 600 points and I'm in the middle of doing a game plan when I should be going through whatever. I just found I wasn't committed to the teaching as I should have been. I know I could be vilified for that, or I could be in trouble for saying that, so I just felt the best scenario for me at the moment is just to be concentrating on hurling. So like, Derek McGrath is honest enough to say he's at the top of the class and some lads are real go-getters and he's got game plans swirling around in his head and he's not able to focus on it. Like, I mean, that's unbelievable honesty, and it just goes to show the bloody workload that's going inside these inter-county senior managers' heads.
Yeah, so I don't think you can ever switch off as an inter-county manager. Just can't. You just must be thinking 24/7 about, especially on the Monday morning, he comes in now and after losing a game or something, that your head would be racing all Sunday night, all Monday morning, goes into training Tuesday, what we're going to do Tuesday evening, and the whole thing has to be planned out to a tee, because players they expect when they go into county training now, we'll just be training bang bang bang, we know exactly what we're going to do, he's going to know what he's going to do, and he has to organise the dietitian if he's there, the strength and conditioning guy, the hurling coach, and he used to overlook all that. So it's not just players that he's trying to organise, he's trying to organise his coaching staff as well. But even for that statement alone, his honesty is unbelievable. Like, you know, he's not going to keep doing his job, because it wouldn't be fair, let alone on the Waterford hurlers, but on his students in the classroom as well. And that honesty alone is absolutely phenomenal.
I wonder, are there a few De La Salle students doing their second or third choice in their CA forms this year in college who wish he'd been a bit more honest last year or the year beforehand? That's the flip side of it. How long has he been struggling with his workload?
I'm not going to look at that side of it at all. I mean, you have to be self motivated in school at that age.
You were the same bully when you were in school, etc. Yeah.
Yeah, well, listen, it didn't matter who was teaching me. But I think the thing about it is, and JJ, you touched on it there, is like, after a game on a Sunday, like, I mean, it's Monday before you get the analysis package, you know, all this software that they're using now where they show clips of different things and pointing out different things. So this is landing into his inbox while he's in school. He has to get on top of that before he runs through it with the lads. Like, the time is at the essence before you get back to that meeting on the Monday night to be able to point out a few different things. And like, realistically, the level of preparation has gone so far, maybe you can't afford, because like, it's 9 to 5, but then you have an hour commute and an hour back, so you could be losing 10 hours on your Monday that you really need to be hitting the pitch and have the prep analysis wise for your players to be able to give them that information.
But as a Waterford supporter, I'd be absolutely delighted here that he's taken off this time as well, because he obviously sees it's either last throw to dice for him, or else he sees a genuine opportunity there. The next step for this Waterford team is, and I don't think they're too worried about the league. And on the show there a couple of weeks ago, he kept on saying, look, once we're out of relegation, we're happy. He never talked about going on and winning, because I think this Waterford team has gone past that. A couple of years ago, they took your right hand off you, because just to win this league, just to start winning things again. But they're looking further afield in this, and then this is the next step on again. He's just going to dedicate his life now for the next 6 months, just so Waterford can go on and make that next step, get into the Ireland final and go on and win that again. So as a Waterford supporter, I'd be absolutely delighted to hear that.
Yeah, you would. You'd be really happy. And like, Damien, you look at the Tipperary backroom team and they've got 18 on it. I think it's 18, isn't it, Mikey? It's the same as Dublin anyways.
It's more than that.
It's very high. Maybe it's over 20. Like, how can a man who has a full-time job in this day and age manage 18 people, which is another full-time job?
Yeah, well, this is it. Like, you know, and you're just saying there about Derek McGrath, you know, leaving his job. The reason why he's leaving it, lads, is he knows that he's a bunch of players here that he has an opportunity to go win, you know. And as you said, he doesn't have many. I don't think he's much interest in winning the league, even though I back him to win the league, right? Which I was wrong. But his sole sights are set on the Munster Championship and the All Ireland campaign like this. But the truth of it is, lads, it's gone to such detail, this hurling management, and as you said, video clips and everything, that once you go in and he's trying to teach, his mind is wandering, and his mind is only on what he's focusing solely on, which is the hurling. And Derek McGrath has probably a young family at home, so he's probably, you know, saying, I want to be there for my family as well as being the manager for the Waterford senior hurlers, and he doesn't want Anton to be sacrificed, and if he's going to sacrifice Anton, he's going to sacrifice his job, you know. But the whole management team, that has gone to a level that is just beyond describable. It's 100% focus. So everyone, like Tipperary set up, as you just said there, Colin, having 18 to 20 on the back room. Someone has to be in charge of these, and it's very hard to be in charge of these on giving them instructions and telling them what you want to do if you're trying to nail down a job. Like, and I see it here myself just with my own job. Like, you have a couple of things going on, and it's hard to do everything. So it's a full-time job. It's gone to professional. It's gone to slowly putting in. So I can actually see Derek McGrath's point. And I said he probably has a young family too that he wants to spend time with as well.
There is just one example. I don't know how common it is, but on the flip side, you could look at someone like Liam Dunn, who was unemployed until he became Wexford, or became unemployed while he was Wexford hurling manager, and being the Wexford hurling manager probably helped him get a sales rep job that he wouldn't have got otherwise. So you can't say that being a manager can also aid you in your employment, but I can definitely see why Derek McGrath has taken the... it feels a need to take this leave of absence.
Yeah, Damien, I think maybe car sales is the best profession, where you just go around talking hurling to customers all day. Maybe that's the future for hurling managers.
That's it. Yeah, just talk hurling, don't bother giving any prices. That'll sell the car, right?
or
say, what do you think, Colin? Hi. What do you think, Colin?
Well, I don't know. You have to talk hurling for.
Creating
that relationship is very important.
But for someone like you now, Colin, right? We'd have to talk a little bit hurling, and we'd have to talk a little bit of football, and then we'd have to talk a little bit about the show. But when it comes down to nitty gritty, the most important thing to you would be about the ice fix.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I know that if you talk hurling with a hurling fan for 10 minutes, the price becomes less important if you have them charmed enough.
Yes, good way.
That's exactly it.
Right, listen, we'll leave it there.
I think you just bought a car, by the way.
I think maybe we'll get Damien onto one of the business podcasts with the boss here, Niall McGarry, to talk sales. But we'll leave it there, lads, because we have Shane Dooley now on the line. Shane, you scored 239 in your last four games and awfully have no points. That must be very annoying.
Well, sure. I wouldn't mind the 239, but the no points is annoying, all right, yeah. Or after putting in maybe 2.5 good performances there over the last couple of games, so it's disappointing not to have that now. But
yeah, I know, and the performance against Limerick at least will give you some sort of encouragement.
Definitely. Like we were looking for the win coming into the last few minutes of that game, and you know, probably a small bit of inexperience or just cost us the end of that. And I mean, even the game before that against Leash, like, we were down to 13 men practically in the second half, and you know, still came back from a long ways down. So you know, it's disappointing to say the least. Yeah.
What are Offaly's realistic expectations now? Because I mean, like, you started in 2007, and I'm sure you would have dreamt of All-Ireland finals and Leinster finals. Offaly have such a brilliant tradition. Where are you at now?
It's hard to know. Like, we're always going to be optimistic. Like, you know, it's been a long time since we're in Leinster final, so like every year you're aiming for that. You know, you want to get a good run in Leinster. You know, even for this year alone, I mean, just staying up in Division 1B has to be the goal now at the minute.
Yeah.
You know, if we don't want to talk about it, but if you drop down there, you know, you're going to be in trouble in a few years down the line. But you know, definitely getting the run in Leinster is the first thing. Competing with the bigger teams, competing with the Division 1A teams, and you know, just see can we build on those type of performances then.
Yeah, and I know you don't want to talk about the 239, but like, there is an awful lot of responsibility on your shoulders to get those kind of scores. Like, I mean, is there an added pressure on that?
Not really, to be honest. Like, it's a lot of that is free taking, and you know, I take that job very seriously. But if it wasn't me doing it, it'd be someone else. So you know, it's just the job I have to do for my team, I suppose.
Yeah, I talk about pressure of, you know, getting the scores for Offaly. Yeah, obviously, Joe Dooley's son. Was there much pressure growing up as Joe Dooley's son? I'm sure the first minute you put a hurl in your hand, you were being earmarked as the future of Offaly hurling.
I was away with the fairies as young lad. I didn't even think about that. Bother me. I know it was a bit of pressure, right, when my father took over as manager. You know, there was pressure on him and pressure on me to perform, and pressure on him to be picking me then if I was to perform. But that's the only time I felt a little bit. But you know, apart from that, you know, just as you say, like when I was growing up, after winning All Ireland, and you know, when I looked at my career then, I thought that's what was going to be happening for me. So it's kind of disappointing, you know, that we haven't won much. But you know, I love the game and I love Offaly, and that's the only way I looked at it. I never put too much pressure on myself anyway.
Yeah, so you would have been 12 in 1998 when Offaly won their last All-Ireland.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so what were your memories of that? Were you sitting on the pitch in Croke Park protesting in the semi-final?
No, I was up in the players' lounge with the rest.
Right. Okay. Yeah, but they were brilliant days for Offaly, Shane. Like, I mean, you would be 100% forgiven for thinking, right, this is, you know, this is my lot now. You know, you're coming off an unbelievable decade. You know, at what point in your career did you think, right, okay, this is not going to go that same way?
I wouldn't say I've ever thought that, or like, you've always hope and stuff, and you know, I'm going to keep plowing on, and hopefully something will come along. Like, anyone that was around before Offaly won anything would tell you that it took very little for the trip to switch that time, and Offaly had a great 20 years, so you know, you'd be hoping like something would spark it off again, and you want to kind of hold on and be there when it happens.
Yeah. What do you think of the perception of Offaly hurling now, Shane? Because since you started playing, and this is just me looking from the outside, is your losses have been put down to lack of fitness and lack of commitment and all these other kind of reasons, rather than the fact that Offaly might be on the slide a little bit. Like, you know, is that fair?
Like, as players, we've done practically everything that's been asked of us over the last few years. So, you know, it's very easy to say a team isn't fit when someone like Tipperary is running circles around you because they're, you know, their chests are out. And, you know, you can always put it down to fitness when it could be just self-belief, or it could be something like that that's holding the team back. So, you know, like, there has been a lot of bad press and negativity around Offaly hurling, but, like, when we go out then and we can put it up to Wexford and Limerick and teams that are supposedly in the top tier on any given day, like, it just, to me, I think it's just a bit of self-belief amongst the players, and you know, once you get that right, anything could happen.
Yeah, I think Gerlach Nann's comments that you're the only team in the modern era with fat legs, bellies and arses, he said, and like, he floated that out there, so that's on top of, you know, Offaly hurling not being as good as it was, and like you said, better teams beating ye, and suddenly the excuse wasn't that these teams were better than ye, it was that ye weren't, you know, ye had the fat arses.
Yeah, but the same year, I wouldn't mind George saying that, but the same year he said it, he was actually in O'Connor Park when we played Kilkenny, and he commented on how fit we looked. So,
right.
Like, it's sensational, isn't it? And it's kind of, you know, it's off the cuff stuff to get headlines and that, so I wouldn't mind it too much.
Yeah, no, listen, you wouldn't really mind it, but at the same time, it's planting that seed, you know, in people's heads that you're not a committed bunch when, like, I'm sure, you know, you don't play senior inter-county level at any level without being committed.
Definitely, and, you know, it's a kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you keep telling lads are unfit and there's bad press about you the whole time, then lads won't commit. Like, they will end up leaving because it's too much pressure and too much hardship. And,
yeah.
You know, maybe it'd be no harm to give a team a break for a while.
And is there fellas not committing in Offaly now? Because Kevin Ryan referenced that at the start of the year. Is there good hurlers in Offaly that could be there and aren't there?
There is probably two or three that aren't, but you know, they haven't been there now in two or three years, so like, that's a long time to be gone from the county scene. So, you know, what we have is what we have, and we've some great young players, but that's the thing, this year it seems to be a very young panel and a kind of a fresh panel, so lads are only finding their feet.
Yeah. How's your back?
You know, I got a puncture this morning coming to work, and I was pulling a mule in a tire, and I actually hurt it this morning.
Oh no.
I know, it's grand now, thanks be to God. You know, I got it sorted that time. It was at me. It was probably an accumulation of a whole load of wrong strength and conditioning work. And and doing things the wrong way, but thankfully God, I got sorted anyway.
So what was the problem? Because you're playing through the pain barrier an awful lot, and it's actually gassed the perception of Offaly is that you're not committed and you're playing through some disc problems in your back.
The degenerative discs in my lower back, and they'll always be there. And what the surgeon said to me was that probably 70% of intercounty players and hurlers would have it anyway, but just they have to manage it, and some lads are just worse, a little bit worse than others. But you know, it's the nature of the sport and the twisting and turning that a lot of have it. So
yeah. So what do you do? What are you supposed to do to help it?
Just keep working on your mobility and your core work and stuff like that. So
right, and it's manageable now.
It's manageable, and it's an ongoing battle. Like I noticed myself, if I stopped doing any of that stuff, that it would come back and catch you fairly quick. So you have to keep on top of it.
Yeah. Okay. Come here. How optimistic are you about the championship? I know staying in Division 2 is your main focus at the moment. You've avoided Kilkenny, if that's any consolation. You know, you've got the round robin winners, which you should be able to handle. I know, like, it's no foregone conclusion. Then you've Dublin or Galway. So in fairness, while Offaly might not be going well at the moment, like you said, a little bit of momentum and a little switch and suddenly, you know, things could turn around.
Yeah, like, we'll always be optimistic, and I always love preparing for championship. Like, it's championship is what you train for at the end of the day, and you know, like, the round robin, like, playing the winners of that is going to be a huge challenge for us this year now, the way things have been going. And once, if we get over that, it'd be brilliant, and we take it one game at a time then. I know that's a bit of a cliche, but that's literally the only way we're looking at it. So
it is, yeah. I know your father's not manager anymore, and you said that there was pressure when he was there. Like, I mean, what's your relationship like with him? Do you bounce things off him much, or?
Oh, definitely, yeah. We'd always be talking, and you know, anytime I'm in the house, well, we trained this evening, and who was there, and yeah, it's like he's still his heart is still in it. You know, he loves to hear about how things are going, and you know, he's a proud Offaly man at the end of the day. So
yeah.
Well,
I wanted to talk. We talked on the show recently about expectations in Offaly and maybe some unrealistic expectations. And it's like when your father was manager and Brian Whelan was manager, because they're legends of Offaly hurling, people might have had in their head, oh, we're going to, the glory days are back because we have these fellas as manager. And, you know, that wasn't the reality of it.
Well, it wasn't, but it's, we were very, very close back in 2010, 11 and making a breakthrough. And, you know, We drew with Galway in Croke Park, and just barely lost the replay in Port Leash. And the following year, Dublin won the league, pulling up, I think, against Kilkenny. And we played them the first round of the championship, and we gave them a right scare up in Croke Park. And we were missing, I think, maybe five or six starters that day through injury and stuff. So it was that kind of thing. If we'd a small bit more luck around that time, maybe we could have made a breakthrough and have been the better for it ever since. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. But, you know, it's a thing with managers in Offaly, they don't stay around too long, and it's something I'd love now if Kevin Ryan could hang on for a while, and just a little bit of consistency, and you know, set your standards and build on them and improve on them every year. Whereas when new managers are coming in, it's just too choppy, changey and stuff, and like things are being left behind then.
Yeah, and it's an awful lot of pressure looking from the outside on Offaly managers. Like, I mean, you look at Pat Flanagan in the football, who I think's done a great job with the footballers, and one bad result and there's at county board meetings delegates want to get rid of him. You know, is this just a general thing in Offaly where, and this goes back to the expectations again, that maybe they're not realistic enough?
Maybe they're not, but I think, you know, in the football, like, off, we were very lucky not to be promoted last year to Division 2.
Yeah.
I think that had a huge effect on them. You know, they were going back into Division 3 this year when they should have been looking forward to Division 2 and progressing. And, you know, maybe they hit a bit of a wall, but that Armagh game definitely, you know, brought a whole load of bad press. And, but, you know, they were very lucky against the Tip team who were flying it last Sunday. So, you know, if they get two good results now, they'll stay in Division 3, which would be a plus for them at the minute, I think. Yeah.
It could actually come down to Leash Offaly in the last game to see who goes to Division 4. So I don't think I'm looking forward to that one.
No, and the hurling could be the same if results don't go away. So
Jesus, a right one is.
Could be a right 2 weeks for the local derby.
Yeah, come here, talk to me about football before we go here. Whenever I think of dual players, I think of Podge Collins and I think of Aidan Walsh. I never really think of Shane Dooley, probably because you bang in scores on a regular basis for the hurlers, but you were on the football panel as well. Was it 2014?
Just for a short period, but I was actually on it for the whole year last year. I joined the panel at the start of the year and got a few Auburn Cup games and stuff, but I hung in there for the year, but I didn't get much of a look in now, unfortunately. I was missing the odd football training here and there because of the hurling. I was giving the hurlers full commitment.
Right.
And it was an enjoyable year. I actually really enjoyed it, and it kind of stood to me then when I went back with Tullamore at the end of the year. So, it was great to experience it. But I always said if I didn't try the dual thing, I'd regret it when I was finished, and I've done now. So I'm happy enough.
Yeah, and come here. Where do you play in the football?
Be same position, forward, kind of full forward line, but. It was disappointing not to feature, but you know, to train and to kind of experience it for the year was good.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. And like, I mean, do you score heavily, like maybe even for your club, Tullamore? Is the same scoring kind of responsibility on you, or do you just play with a bit of freedom, or what type of player are you?
I'm kind of the big full forward target man, kind of just win it and throw it out to the lads.
Ah, okay.
The lads mightn't agree that I throw it out too often. But,
Yeah. Okay, listen, come here, Shane. Thanks very much for taking the call. Best of luck for the year.
Not about it. Thanks a million, Carl.
It is tough. It won't tell lies. There's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough. I won't tell you. But again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We've waited so long. I know I've seen one of your tweets yesterday. It said 6 years. It's obviously a leash, man. But it's a long 6 years for us there. And we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after we went to the final, I was Tuesday morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was baking freeze with his socks pulled up pretending to be TJ Reid. And he fairly brought me back down to earth that day.
Lads, is it fair to say this is where the season really kicks into gear? You're heading in towards the last group game. You're determining who you're going to play in quarterfinals. Then you're hitting quarterfinals. This is kind of the next step up. If you're going through maybe tiers of the season, there's definitely another lift into your last game.
But even if you take from the start of the year your training session, it's always one game in the league that you think, right, I'm actually your fitness, you're after turning the corner, you're after the hard slog for the January, February, and then you get into March, and then it all kind of comes together in one game, and usually comes to the middle or the end of the league, and then you're kind of saying, right, am I on the team or I'm not on the team? If you're not on the team by the end of the league, you're actually looking over your shoulder, you're getting very, very worried, you know. So the thing about it is your fitness should be 100%. The hurling you're after doing over the last 6 or 8 weeks, that'll stand you there as well. So you'll see now from now on, the games will actually get better, the hurling will get a lot more crisper. You see the tip and Kilkenny won there a couple of weeks ago, absolute cracker of a game, because I think the couple of teams, if they played first or second match, I don't think we'd get as good of hurling. We wouldn't have seen TJ's goal, for argument's sake, you know. And you see it all, it kind of comes together, and you're kind of slowly building momentum, you're building confidence, you're building fitness, and all that comes together coming towards the end of the league as well. So it's a huge thing for even a player alone, even players' confidence alone, really, more than anything.
And yeah, you also have the point of you have to decide whether you want to play in a quarter final or in a relegation playoff.
Mm. See, it's got to that end of the season. I'm glad you brought that up, because Clare play Waterford, who neither team you'd say are after having a terrible league, they're getting through the league, but one of the two of them could be playing Dublin in a league, because Kilkenny will most likely beat Dublin. In Derek McGrath touched on this, it's finding the balance for the likes of Clare and Waterford of staying in Division 1 but also maybe having their eye on the Championship, because Clare are in the same boat as Waterford. They focused too much on the league the last 2 years, and now their focus has moved to Munster Championship All-Ireland, and Derek was honest enough to admit that. So they're playing each other and they're trying to strike a balance of the perception of Waterford or Clare if they're relegated will be like, this is a disaster. Yeah. And it's a confidence knock to the players, because no matter how much you tell them, lads, it wasn't our focus, you're still relegated and the country thinks you're not going that well.
Yeah.
And it's unfair, because it's not that they're going badly, it's that the bloody league is, there's only six teams and it's completely unfair.
Yeah, because even you've seen with Galway last year, they got relegated and then everyone's writing them off, but they went on to win the contest, a semi-final, very, very lucky now to not beat Tipperary again.
True.
Like, you know, so you take that into line, and it's kind of a case of, there's two probably knockout games that will be played at the weekend, Kilkenny and Dublin and then Waterford and Clare. So that's a good thing to focus on as well. You know, if you win it, you're giving yourself every chance to qualify. If you don't, you know, it's going to be a knockout, you're going to be in relegation then as well.
Yeah, Jade or Damien, you won't be happy about what Derek McGrath said, that they kind of changed their training regime this year and their focus wasn't so much on the league. It would have been nice if he told you that before you tipped them to win it.
Yeah, yeah, it would be nice to be sending you a text to say, don't back us, Damien. You know, because you're asking there, when does the whole hurling thing change? Season. I always found, Colin, that the whole hurling season used to change after St. Patrick's Day, when the evens were getting longer, the time changed, the evens were getting longer, so you could spend a lot more time doing the hurling. As JJ said there as well, the running in the hard clog is over, it's now going to be concentrating completely on the hurling. The evenings are getting longer there now. Lads would be able to do, you'll see some teams now, which is all the goal now, which I could never understand, is doing the double sessions during the day. So when the morning, they get brighter in the morning, but there'll be some sessions done at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, and it'll be brought back in at 7, 8 o'clock that evening to finish off hurling sessions, which is all the go now. I think the Dublin footballers is doing an awful lot of it as well. So it's from here on in, the whole hurling and the whole championship gets interesting in the league. But yeah, always from this day, John, I forward to the hurling, because the land and the field are getting harder, and the ball will travel faster, and the new spitters come out, and the nice hurlies and the multi-cogs are put on. So looking forward to the whole championship and the end of the league from here on in.
Yeah, JJ, you didn't, Kilkenny, Cody doesn't entertain those 7 o'clock AM sessions.
We never trained 2 days, like, we never trained early in the morning, or we never done 2 trains in one day.
Right.
Absolutely crazy, I think it is now.
Yeah, trains. Dublin started that under Pat Gilroy, and yeah, they got some success out of it, and then they all, yeah, everyone copied it.
We all know, it's just Cody, they used to turn up with one ball, no whistle, and just like go at each other for an hour, and then everybody would go home. That's how it was, JJ,
dinner,
wasn't it?
We get dinner in Langton's, we go home, they were happy out.
Yeah, that's all they ever did.
That's it, don't spare the Hurleys then.
We did it one year there. I remember, and we trained at 6:30 in the morning, and we went back and we trained again at 7:30 that evening. So we did, and the following morning I was absolutely shattered. I had to go in then to work to try to do a day's work. So, like, I just couldn't understand it. To talk about, you were talking about the principles and the importance of recovery. I just couldn't understand it. But we'd done a double session. I reckon the whole squad were exhausted from going back 2 days later.
Yeah,
to do a training session. So I just can't understand it myself.
I don't know what it's trying to achieve. It actually happened during my career when I was with Parnells, and there was no thought put into it. It was purely Pat Gilroy's doing this, we'll do this.
He's a testing player, so is it? Is that what they're trying to do?
I think that's what Pat Gilroy might have been trying to do, because there was talk of egos on the Dublin squad, and, you know, maybe he was trying to root these lads out and wanted lads that wanted 100% commitment. So from that point of view, I can understand it. But then again, I heard he did it with St. Vincent's in the 2 months between a Leinster final and an Ireland semi-final. So that he wouldn't have been doing that with them. So yeah, I don't know what benefit he saw in it. I'd love to ask him sometime. But the Parnells manager told us to do this. We're doing this. We're training on 7 a.m. next Tuesday morning. I said, I won't be there, right? So he says, do you want to win a Dublin championship? I says, I do. I says, well, if you want to win one, you'll be there. I says, you can't relate my desire to win a Dublin championship with me being able to get up at 6 a.m, drive across the city, and then have to go do a day's work. I says, that's ridiculous. I said, there could be fellas here doing that training that are at the back of every group, at the back of every run. Yeah. And you just, because they're able to get up early because they live close to the pitch, you're telling me they want to win a championship more than me. I says, absolutely not, I won't be there. And there was a big argument about it. I point blank refused to go. And then he came,
I'd love to manage you, will you, you know?
He came to me after training and he says, will you please just come to the next one? It'd look bad if you're not there. So I went to the next one as a compromise, and then he abandoned them. They were pointless. There was no thought put into them. It was just ridiculous. And he was trying to tell me that I didn't want to win one.
Just because
I didn't want to go to that. And that's the gas thing at inter-county level, lads. Some of these things are often sold to you in a way. There's a drink ban, 3 months. If you don't want to do it, you don't want to win in All-Ireland. Do you know what I mean? That's the way it's often said. Yeah, and then how on earth can you say, no, I don't want to do it? And everyone looks around at you. Well, then you don't want to win in All-Ireland. I don't know. Like, I mean, I think that's a lot of time half of the pressure that's put on you.
Yeah, sure. Look, it's probably managers testing players, and there's ways of testing players without actually flogging them, because two sessions in one day is counterproductive. Especially, you don't see any professional team doing it, especially go do 8 hours work there as well. Like, you know what I mean? It can physically be possible. You go train in the morning, do it, fair enough, the weekend if you want to do it, but to do 8 hours work in the meantime there as well, and then come back train, you just mentally, you'll be absolutely exhausted. You come back from training go to work, go back home, get something to eat. Oh, geez, I have to go training again. So where's the where can you get your motivation for that? You know what I mean? It's just absolutely
there
crazy.
There was even talk of Dublin training the morning. I think they trained early morning and then had an Auburn Cup that night. Had match.
Like, probably still going,
like, that's dangerous for like player welfare as far as I'd be concerned. Now, we don't know exactly what they were doing in that training session, but you know, I don't know.
More than they did in the Auburn Cup match.
Maybe, yeah, depending on who they were playing. That's actually the height of disrespect, whoever they were playing, you know. Maybe it was Wexford, Mikey.
Yeah. No need for that.
Damien, what's going on down in Clare? You obviously meet a lot of people from Clare down there in the garage. What's the perception of how this new regime's doing? And is there much mention of how well Davey's doing in Wexford as well?
Oh, there is, yeah, they're all going like this. David gone to Wexford, he's working his charm down there, and you know, there's some people that don't care, and there's other people that are, you know, they're delighted that, you know, it's working out from down in Clare, but, or down in Wexford, but the whole, basically, some, the big thing down here is the same, they don't know how the Clare hurlers want to do this year. They don't under the new management, they don't know where they are good as they thought they were. But then they're saying to themselves that they don't really care, they're not really caring that much about the league this year. They won the league last year. He's trying out an awful lot of new players, and then he's saying when the few players come back from Ballier that they will strengthen the whole squad. So I think myself the Clare training preparations is really one of the up a notch from here on in. They've no excuses now. They've their whole squad to pick from. The rumour is at the moment that one or two of the players, which I'm not going to name because I don't know how concrete it is, have been dropped off the panel since last Saturday night, where there was a few of the players that have been out drinking when there's been meant to be a drinking ban and they've been caught. So that's just the word on the street at the moment, without mentioning any names. But so basically the management have upped to the notch as well with discipline and everything. So but that's what they're saying, they're more focused on the championship, not on the league this year, and that the current management are trying out an awful lot of new players, and now they have the Ballier led back, which will strengthen the whole thing. So that's exactly it. I keep saying it, Colin, I feel the Clare need to win a Munster championship to put their stamp down and to say that they, you know, they're a really good team. And I know that's a hard thing to do with Tipperary, but I think they need to be really putting in a bigger shift in Munster. They haven't won a Munster championship game in years.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough. And it's weird enough with a new management team, JJ, how much of a pass these two fellas are getting. Obviously because of their success at underage level, but also they have been trying players out and it's not their first 15 and they are holding their own in Division 1.
I think, look, it's been successful here so far. From coming into the job, you kind of find it very, very hard, and especially that the start had down in Cork as well. It wasn't ideal for them either, you know. But then the dustiness is down and went again on fairness. And since then, they put in consistent performances, and which that's what he's looking for. But look, I think he knows his best. I think the two lads know their best 15 anyway, and they're just trying to bring lads in and out of that kind of starting 15 that they're going to have. But look, again, Tony Kelly is back, which is a huge plus for him. Like, having him back in any team is going to be absolutely massive as well. So look, so far I'd be happy. If it was a Clare man, I'd be happy enough with the league so far. They're not sticking their head above the parapet or anything like that now, but they're steady, they're consistent. Just the game I've seen against Kilkenny, now they're very, very physical as well, and they played the running game and they had it down to a tee, and they seemed very, very comfortable with that as well. So to just try to find a couple of more scorers, and Patch Collins is back flying at centre forward as well, and after finding him, he'll be definitely centre forward come championship. So it's only trying to finish off the couple of moves that Podge is starting. That's the only thing they're missing, but they are making the chances, so I wouldn't be worried about
that. They're coming from under 21, where you know you're very much building a team to peak at a very specific window on time, and definitely not looking at the league. They've won the league. Clare aren't going to be remembered for winning back-to-back leagues. They have won, I think, one Munster championship game in 9 attempts. They haven't won a Munster title since 1998. There's no doubt that's what the two lads are targeting. They've got Limerick in a semi-final. Limerick are Division 1B, not having a great season so far. They're absolutely targeting that game. win that, they're one game away from winning the title that they haven't won since 1998. I think that's absolutely what they're building towards.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned Limerick there. They're playing Galway, and this was potentially billed to be the league decider. Only Wexford and Davy got a nice little dig at that as well. Davy really enjoyed that, but you know, this was taken away, and now this game is a damn squib really, because it's between two teams who are definitely in quarterfinals. Mm. They're not going to go up, so they've actually nothing to play for. And like, I was thinking maybe they'll play it clever and they'll go, right, I'd rather not play Kilkenny or Tipperary, you know, but yeah. Division 1 is so bloody close, yeah, that there's no way of knowing until the last, like, you can't tell who you're going to play. So like, I mean, you might see a little bit between Galway or Limerick, or what do Galway and Limerick do? Do they experiment a little bit this week coming up to this match? It's a real weird one, because there'll be a real flat feeling around this game.
Yeah, but I think they should, whoever they want to go out to win it, because you get into the habit of winning, you need a kind of bit of confidence going in. If you go in after Limerick, just say if it's Galway, Limerick after beating you, and you're going in playing the likes of Waterford or something like that, now in the quarter final, you're kind of saying, geez, where are we going, you know? But if you win your games, that's the game they have in front of them now, so win their game that is in front of them and then worry about the quarter final after that. Build a bit of momentum, a bit of confidence, and then you never know where that's going to take you after it, you know? So if I was either one of the teams, I'd go out to win the game, simple as that.
Yeah.
I think going like a challenge match, I just think, why not try something different? Like you say, it's a shot to nothing. Neither of them are going to feel they're coming out of this league with much momentum, because they haven't gone up. They're in a quarter final anyway. Why not? If there's anything left to try out, I'd nearly try it out against top class opposition. Every county plays like challenge matches against, you know, teams on the same level as them. They can just treat this as one of those with a crowd.
Yeah, Galway aren't really in experimenting mode this league, are they, Damien?
Well, Colin, I think the game is very important between Galway and Limerick to do the next day, because just for the simple, the saying out there, if the game's worth playing, it's worth winning, you know. And plus, they're talking about making the National Hurling League the top tier 8 teams, right? So at the moment, there's 6 teams in it. Right, Wexford have now topped the group, so they're automatic going into Division 1 next year. So if they do make it a top 8 tier, right, that means the 8 team is going to be picked on the winner of Galway and Limerick. That's if that championship comes in place, which has to be voted on later this year, which more likely will happen, that division, the top tier in the National Hurling League, will become an 8 team. So we have 6 at the moment. We now have Wexford, which is 7. The 8 team is going to be decided on who wins between Limerick and Galway. So I think it's a very, very important game for whoever wins this game next weekend. Number 2, winning becomes the habit. So it's very important that they win this game, to build confidence, build momentum, and just get into winning ways, right? And then, as I said, you know, if the game's okay, it's worth
it.
So I think it's important.
Yeah. All right, Damien. We might let you go, Damien. We've lost your line there completely. There's no point in continuing all that. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Maybe he has a point. I didn't really think about that eight team league next year. So maybe the idea that you'd go out into any league game.
I couldn't understand going into a league game, not going to win it, to be honest with you. It wouldn't, fair enough, practice match, but I'd be going, try and lay down a marker now for the rest of the year, and lay down a marker for your own position on the team, really, more than anything. Is if you go out and go through the motions there, you might get an opportunity the next day, and then if you don't get an opportunity the next day and someone else plays well in your position, then you're completely gone off the team, let alone the panel itself, you know. So if I was talking out for a game, if it were to be at Natal, I just want to win it, to be honest.
Here, just a quick one there before we leave this, is Gerlachnan again. We love Gerlachnan, he's a wind-up merchant, but I was looking at this. He was talking about Micheál Donoghue, the Galway manager, and his body language, and he doesn't have any aggression, and he was saying at least Anthony Cunningham would square up to Brian Cody and put it up to him, and O'Donoghue just stands there and things like that. And I'm just wondering, is this over analysing things, that a manager needs to be aggressive on the line and put it up to another man? I see Derek McGrath put it up to Cody as well. Do players entertain
Jim
that kind
Gavin.
Of thing? Jim Gavin is the most kind of reserved manager you're ever going to see. He's a good example. So like, I mean, this, it's over analysis really. You're on the field. Does it make any bit of difference that your manager, maybe afterwards you might look at it and go, oh, he was behind us there. I'm not sure.
Like all these what he's after saying, everyone went kind of pulled up to Cody, but they're in All-Ireland finals, All-Ireland semi-finals. There's no point in going up squaring up to Brian Cody in the third round, fourth round of the league. It just doesn't make sense, like, you know what I mean, because you're not going to be as fired up as you're going to be when it comes to knockout championship, and there's no point in saying any different, like, you know. But very, very unfair to kind of criticise his body language. He's probably in the league, you're sitting back, let your players see what kind of reactions they're going to get. And if you're jumping up and down the line and sprinting up and down the line, you can't see what's going on, number one. And then maybe he's not his character. I don't know the man at all. Maybe he is a quiet man. Reserved,
he is quiet. I met him after the All-Ireland quarter-final in Semple Stadium last year, interviewed him, and he's quite self-contained. He's quite reserved. He is quite quiet spoken. That could be different in a dressing room, but it doesn't make him a bad manager.
I presume it's exactly my point. Just because you're quiet doesn't mean you're going to be a bad manager. He obviously says what he has to say. He got the job on, sure, he's been with Tipperary before as well, and he's been with Clare and Bridge. There's one an All-Ireland club with them as well, like, you know, so he has plenty of experience. So he obviously, when the time comes, he gets his teams right for it. But I'd be more surprised if I seen Les squaring up to Brighton Cody in the third round of the league rather than an All-Ireland semi-final, you know. So I think it's very, very harsh on Micheál Donoghue as well, to be honest.
Yeah, and we had Eamon Kelly on the show recently, and he was talking about not being on the sideline at all, that he likes to sit up in the stand and he likes to communicate with the fellas down in the field. And I was saying on the football show, it's such a good idea. I've been like a sideline reporter for long enough to know, and a co-commentator. So I've been in the stand looking at matches, and I've been on the sideline looking at matches, and there is no comparison in the analysis you can do from the stand compared to what you can do in pitch side. And I just don't understand why more managers don't do that.
It's just tradition. A manager has to stand in the line. Yeah. That's you see it up and down the country, you know what I mean? That people have to, if they weren't there, everyone looking, where is the manager gone? Like, you know what I mean? He's gone hiding or something like that. But exactly what you're saying, if you're on pitch side, it's very, very hard to see something happening in the other field, because you have 10 or 12 players in one play. No matter where you look at in your eyesight, there's going to be 10 or 12 players in the way anyway, like, you know. So a lot of management teams that would have a lad up in the stand just kind of come back and down and talking to the selectors with that to let them know what is going on, or if a corner forward is getting a bit of hardship in the corner, to bring him out the field, or what kind of tactics is going, especially over the last 3 or 4 years, the way the tactics has gone in the hurling as well. You need to know, have an overall view of the whole playing field rather than just at eye level.
It's all for show, really, you know. At the end of the day, you hear professional footballers say it all the time. Oh, sure, manager's up screaming at you and he's pointing and he's gesticulating and he's doing this, and they're all like, can't hear what he's saying, there's 40,000 people roaring their heads off. You've no clue what the manager's saying. He's doing that for himself. Unless you actually do a basketball style timeout, take him off the field, take out the whiteboard and say, right, now you're going to loop left and you're going to go. Unless you're actually giving people detailed instructions like that, you're just shouting for the sake.
I've been in Croke Park in big matches, and a score would go up and I'm wing forward and I'm shouting at the centre half forward, who's only half the pitch away from me, and he's not looking around because he's no clue I'm shouting at him. That's the level of noise that's there. So managers are wasting their time in Croke Park.
Yeah, I have heard Brian Cody shout me a couple of times. I made sure I looked the other way and to let on I didn't hear. I said, no way, I'm going over there.
Yeah, you can double bluff it in Croke Park.
I couldn't hear you, Brian. Sorry.
Right, okay, we'll leave it there. We'll come back with some quick accumulators.
After the match with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was.
Hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
I didn't, but I was only a special guest. That Thursday, you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said yes on the Marty squad. Says yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked just in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad plugs on our show here?
That's three.
Wait, no, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads. Right, we have a serious show to do here. Right,
I'm going to kick it off here. Clare and Waterford's very, very even game. I'm going to go for Waterford to win that one. Cork and Tipperary, the handicap for Tipperary is -3, which is, like, I think it's a great, absolutely great bet. Kilkenny Dublin, the handicap is -3 again. And I'm going to go for Kilkenny -3. And then Limerick Galway, that's a toss up. I'm going to go for Galway -1 in that game. So there'd be all pretty much even money bets. So you've a nice few quid if all four of them are coming up for you.
Can I agree with you on Galway -1 at 11-10? And I'd agree with you on Tipperary, but I'm going to back Dublin to beat Kilkenny.
+3.
Nah, just
straight up.
Yeah.
Wow. Because for that bet you put on a tenner and you will lose a tenner.
Guaranteed. I don't know, they're playing them in Parnell Park, are they?
Yeah, Parnell Park, yeah.
Is it Parnell Park?
It's in Parnell Park.
Oh, well, that
Dubs
does
have
change it a bit.
A good record
that
there.
Does change
tough place
bit.
To go, Willie.
Yeah, look, it's one of those. I hate playing in Parnell Park. I've never played well there. It's just a weird one. Clare and Waterford then, Mikey, to round it off.
Clare and Waterford, I will stick with Clare, yeah.
Okay, JJ, the one that people will actually pay attention to.
No, I was going the same as yourself, Willie, actually, bar one. I go with the Clare against Waterford, back Clare, and then I go Tip minus three, Kilkenny minus three, and then Galway minus one.
Yeah, okay, I actually think Galway minus one is an absolutely fantastic... Although Barry Nash is back for Limerick, and Shane Dowling played very well since he's back, so that's a nice beef up to their forward line.
Yeah.
And we were actually told about Declan Hannan by Shane Dowling a couple of weeks ago. We were wondering on the hurling show here about him playing centre back, and was it an experiment? He, according to Shane Dowling, is the best centre back in schools hurling when he was younger.
Yeah.
Best in Ireland. So it's not a position he's just learning, it's more a position, let's just put him back there where he was absolutely
he's
brilliant.
He's natural, yeah.
You know, where he's more natural.
Micheál Donoghue is going to politely ask his team to win the match and they're going to respond.
Right, we'll be back on Monday. It'll be absolutely loads to talk about. Quarterfinals will be guaranteed then, so see you then.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.